Looking at what's happened over the course of this past week, got to split out a few things. The first part is the economic data, which in some ways is a little bit irrelevant because obviously we've got some new developments which have come through over the course of this last few days. But as far as the economic data is concerned, you know, the US economy, we had revised Q3 GDP. There was a small revision there to 2.1% from 2% annualised. The main support for GDP growth has been consumer spending, which was running at 1.7% annualised. That's not as strong as it was in Q2. In Q2, you know, had it way up at 9%. That gave us a 6.7% GDP growth rate. So looking backwards, in the US, we had a slowdown or a slowing in the pace of the economic recovery in the US in Q3. But all the data we've had for the month of September and the month of October is that, yeah, we got to a low point for US economic growth around about August. And since then, we've had a pretty robust economic improvement. And we can see it in some of the October data that came through last week. We had October personal income spending. It was expected to be up 0.2%. It lifted 0.5%. We had personal consumer spending. It was expected to lift by a very strong 1%. It lifted even stronger than that by 1.3%. October new home sales, which were expected to be flat after having risen over 7% the month before, actually rose again by another 0.4%. And the regular information we get about the labour market in the US is just unbelievably strong. So we had initial jobless claims for the most recent week. They've gone down below 200,000. You very rarely see that and suggest that the labour market is extremely tight. We also had some manufacturing and services sector purchasing managers' reports for November, and they were firm too. The November manufacturing PMI, this is the old-style manufacturing PMI, lifted from 58.4 to 59.1, better than expected. And the services sector PMI did come back a touch to 57, but that's still a strong reading from 58.7. So looking at all that data, things are very, very strong. Another factor we had last week was that the president reappointed Jerome Powell as the chairman of the Federal Reserve Board. And the deputy chairman is Liv Brainard, who's also a dove. So, you know, it looks as if, you know, the Fed is going to continue going slowly in terms of lifting interest rates. But of course, we also had last week the emergence out of Africa of the Omicron variation of Delta. We don't know a lot about it, and that's part of the problem why we got a pretty savage market reaction to the details that we did get. And the detail we did get is that this one seems to be way more transmissible than the early variations, including Delta. But we don't know anything really about whether it's a serious illness or whether it's relatively benign. It's quite possible it may be relatively benign. And it's interesting that the first two cases which have shown up in Australia over the course of the weekend, both the people who've turned up with it out of, they transitioned through Doha after getting flights from South Africa. They came in through Sydney, and they're already in quarantine. But what we know about it is that both the people who are both fully vaccinated, and they're both asymptomatic. In other words, they're showing no symptoms. This was a regular check that picked up the coronavirus. So there's just a hint in this that maybe this isn't a particularly serious illness. We won't know. It could be very transmissible, but it may not be a particularly serious illness. We don't know just yet. And it's going to take a couple of weeks at least before we get more information about this one. Very near term, it presents a dent to near term economic growth prospects. Of course, it leads to people's expectations about central banks, whether they're going to be particularly aggressive. Those ones that were starting to be aggressive may be pulling back for a period. You know, all of this is up there in the air for the time being, so we'll have to wait and see exactly what happens through this. This week in the US, apart from, you know, anything that develops with the virus, we've got a lot more economic data, and because you know this is before all these recent developments with coronavirus, yeah, most of it's going to be pretty strong. We've also got Powell testifying twice through the course of the week. He's going to be, we think, pretty dovish as far as his comments are concerned. But we have other things coming through, like pending home sales out tonight. That's going to be strong. It'll be up about 1%. We've got September Case-Shiller house prices. They're still pretty firm. And for the most recent month, they look as if they're up another 1.1%. That will keep the annual change in US house prices above 19% year on year. This is still a niggling problem as far as inflation is concerned, too. It's imputed rents that get into the US CPI eventually. We've had the first surge in the CPI relating to supply issues and high energy prices. We're going to get a little bit toing and froing in the CPI over the next few months in the US. One impact of Omicron so far has been it's taken a big dent to international energy prices. So, you know, we will get a month or so. We'll have to wait till December before we see it. But, you know, that'll take a bit of steam out of the CPI temporarily. But moving into 2022, high house prices through high rents are going to really start to give second wind to the CPI, and we'll start to lift it again. So, you know, the problem hasn't gone away as far as high inflation is concerned in the US. It'll be back again in spades as we get into 2022. But it's going to be a bit undulating over the course of the next month or so. That may give a bit more chance for that bit of a lift, the quite significant lift we've seen in bond yields, but to retrace a bit further before they start to rise again at some point in the future. Some of the other factors this week, we'll be looking towards the labour market data. We've got non-farm payrolls coming out on Friday, and you know these are still looking pretty strong. You know, we'll have average hourly earnings coming out. They were up 0.4% month on month going back to October. They'll be up another 0.4% for November, we think. That will lift the annual rate of change in wages to 5% from 4.9%. So regardless of what you get with Omicron and its impacts, you know, we have got wages which are rising fast enough in the US to keep inflation ticking over. So if the Fed gets delayed a little bit in the way in which it's withdrawing the monetary accommodation in the US, it still looks as if it's only going to be temporary because we've still got these underlying longer-term pressure points running through. Non-farm payrolls, we think, lifted 563,000 for the most recent month. That was after 531,000, so that would be a strong result. That's where it comes in. And the unemployment rate's expected to come down to 4.5% from 4.6%. So, you know, all of these are pretty strong readings still running through the US. But the obvious proviso that for the time being, the market is going into a bit of a blind panic about Omicron and what that might do, whether it needs more restrictions and all those sorts of things. The truth of it is we simply don't know at this stage. We won't know for 2 weeks. Patience is a virtue, but financial markets don't have that virtue, unfortunately. They never have been patient, and so they just react. So that's where we're going to see some pretty volatile movements running through the course of the next week. In terms of China, we had very little coming out over the course of the past week. If anything, there seems to be a little bit of a improvement in relationships between China and the US, and also China and ourselves. There's some talk that China's looking to take some of the restrictions off imports of Australian coal. This is partly because they're having to, because they've had all sorts of problems with their power plants, and they've needed our coal. So it looks as if just a little bit of some of that pressure just starting to fade in the bilateral relationships between China, US, and ourselves. But it's all very, very tentative at this point. This week in China, we move into purchasing managers' reports. These always come out at the end of the month, running into the first part of the new month. And on Tuesday, we'll get the official manufacturing purchasing managers' index and services sector PMI. If anything, they may drift a little bit firmer. So the November, May manufacturing PMI looks to be coming around about 49.6 compared with 49.2. Maybe the services sector PMI holding up. It was 52.4 last month, probably holding that level for the most recent month. We'll get the private sector, the more reliable cakes in PMIs, both for the manufacturing and services sectors, coming out Wednesday and Friday this week. And, they're looking okay-ish too. So the cakes in manufacturing PMI did actually lift surprisingly to 50.6 going back to October. It was expected to dive below 50, but it didn't. It went the other way. And it's expected to hold that level, 50.5, for the most recent month. And the cakes in services sector PMI was also better than expected last month in October at 53.8. Hopefully it'll hold that level, we think, for the month of November as well. Last week in Australia, we had a bit of data coming through relating to Q3 and also the month of October. The Q3 data was construction work done. It fell a lot less than the market expected. So the market was expecting construction work done because of, obviously the shutdowns we had in New South Wales and Victoria to lead to a fall of a bit over 3%. It was only down 0.3%. So that was way better than expected. A lot of work continued all the way through those problems we had running through Q3. We had Q3 private capex data. That fell about as expected. It was down 2.2%. That was around market expectations after being up 4.4% going to Q2. So that will make a negative contribution to GDP. It was largely concentrated again in plant machinery. Plant machinery was down 4.1% because a lot of businesses were not able to operate through Q3. But we also had expectations in that survey for what businesses will be doing in terms of business investment spending in the 2021-2022 financial year. We get these estimates every 3 months. And last month, the estimate was $127.7 billion of CapEx spend for this financial year. That jumped quite sharply to $138.6 billion. That's up 5.8% year-on-year from the same estimate going back a year ago. So even though businesses were being hit through Q3 in southeastern Australia, they were still optimistic about how they would spend through the course of the financial year. They were still pretty optimistic about things picking up beyond the lockdowns. We also had October retail sales came out. These were way stronger than expected. It does appear as if in the tail end of the shutdowns, people were starting to spend up a storm, getting ready to spend a lot more as they came out. We had anecdotal evidence of that in Sydney and I believe in Melbourne too, the willingness of people to go back and start to do normal activities and spend money. Well, we saw it in October retail sales. We thought that they would be up 2.5%. They were up 4.9%. So that was way stronger than expected. It compares with a 1.3% lift the month before. So, the real weak point for retail sales went back to June, July. Since then, we've really been starting to see things starting to improve. And we should see that continuing. It's too early for Omicron to really exert much of an influence on spending plans at the moment, other than perhaps a little bit with international travel. International travel obviously starts to become a bit more problematic again with this new variant. But other than that, we should see things continuing to run pretty well. This week, we've got a bit of Q3 stuff, and we've also got a bit of October stuff coming through. The Q3 information all relates to GDP, and we get some more contributors to that coming out today with business inventories and company profits. They'll probably make a small contribution to GDP. On Tuesday, We'll get both the current account surplus for Australia for Q3 and also net exports contribution to GDP. This will be by far the strongest contributor to economic growth for Q3. The current accounts, we thought that this would lift again. Now, put this into some sort of context. Until 2 years ago, Australia had not run a current account surplus since the early 1970s. In other words, over 40 years since we last had a quarterly current account surplus. Over the last 2 years, we've started to run a string of these where exports have really lifted and import volumes have been held back to some degree. Well, in the most recent quarter, the current account surplus has lifted from $20.5 billion surplus going back to Q2 to we think it will go to $27.8 billion surplus. That's on the basis of the monthly international trade data that we've seen. If that's where it comes in, the net export contribution to GDP will probably be a full percentage point of positive contribution. That was after a negative contribution of 1 percentage point going back the quarter before. So it's a big turnaround between the two quarters, and it will provide a pretty big offset to some of the really weak points in Q3 GDP. So Q3 GDP comes out on Wednesday. It will certainly be a negative sign on the front of it because of the shutdowns and what that did largely to household consumption expenditure, which will be a deep negative running through the numbers. Business investment spending, a bit of a negative too, but a big positive contribution coming through from net exports. And at this stage, the market consensus is minus 2.7% quarter on quarter for GDP. That would reduce the annual growth rate in GDP from 9.6% year on year to 3%, positive 3% year on year. I think there's a chance that we may do a bit better than that minus 2.7%. So, but still, that will be the negative quarter. Beyond that quarter, of course, we start to lift again as we come out of it. And we see that with some of the October numbers last week. We had international trade, or we got international trade coming out. We've also got credit data coming out. We've got housing finance, we've got home building approvals data coming out. Most of these home building approvals, perhaps a small negative on that, down 2%. The other indicators, mostly reasonably positive, still showing some strength running through international trade and still some strength through credit growth for the month of October as well. So a little bit of firmness running through those. We also get revised retail sales. They're probably going to stay at that 4.9% that we saw in the preliminary reading that came out last week. So Australia is a strange mix at the moment where, looking backwards, you've had a horrible Q3 other than for net exports. But as we've coming out of that, really starting to bounce out pretty strongly as we move ahead. Out of Europe last week, we had November consumer confidence. We had the manufacturing PMI, services sector PMI. Consumer confidence is starting to take a dent in Europe. It's not just the most recent week of Omicron. Before that, we had moving into their autumn and winter, we've had quite a significant lift in COVID infection rates. Part of the problem in Europe is that it's having its coldest late autumn and early winter in about 30 or 40 years. Savagely cold weather running through Europe at the moment. And so that's forced a lot of people to go inside, and inside is where the virus spreads. So this might be part of the problem that's been running through there. But nevertheless, you've had one or two countries there which have had to reintroduce restrictions, which has been a bit of a jolt. And that's before the Omicron variation that we need more information about that's coming through now. So consumer confidence just taking a bit of a dent. It's looking a bit softer for Europe running into their late autumn and early winter. We also had November manufacturing PMI and services sector PMI coming out. They're still holding up pretty well. So the manufacturing PMI actually lifted to 58.6 from 58.3, and the services sector PMI went up to 56.6 from 54.6. So it's a bit of a mixed bag there in Europe, but you know, obviously the, some of the bigger threats relate to Europe at the moment in terms of both what COVID's doing on other variations and this new one with Omicron. This week in Europe, we start to look back at inflation again. And it'll be a reminder, this inflation problem has been high. On Tuesday, we get the November CPI comes out for Europe. The headline CPI is expected to lift to 4.4% year-on-year from 4.1%. And the core CPI will lift to 2.2, we think, from 2.1. Later in the week, we'll also get their producer prices coming out. And this is... again, you know, the problem we face with trying to work out exactly what's going to happen to inflation in the near term. Producer prices in Europe, the expectation for November is that the annual rate of producer price inflation will lift from an already extraordinary high 16% year-on-year to 19% year-on-year. Now, when you think in terms of... as we move into our Christmas buying period here, for many things, Christmas presents, all those sorts of things running into the December quarter, just about anything that's sourced from overseas has now got a much higher price tag on it and is also in scarce supply. So you've not only got the pressure running into the wholesale price as it comes into the country, but you've also got a whole lot of retailers here now who... you can't supply stuff in the near term because it's caught up. The most likely response to that is that for the most in-demand items, they will be putting a bit of a price premium on that. So the price pressure's still building. So this is where it's such a mixed bag when we're looking ahead now. We've got the price pressures coming through, but we've also got... near term, just this very slight dent that maybe comes through from Omicron. But remember, with Omicron, if in 2 weeks' time we find out that this is actually a mild illness that doesn't require further restrictions, that's a distinct possibility. Things will take off again, and you'll see the buying in bonds turning to selling very quickly, and a very savage lift in yields. If, on the other hand, Omicron is a particularly nasty virus, which is resistant to current vaccinations and spreads very easily and causes high death rates, then obviously we face the risk of the world being plunged back into deep recession. We just don't know. And this is the problem that's facing financial markets at the moment. We have very, very different potential outcomes for the next few weeks, depending upon what information shows about Omicron over the next fortnight.